Hi, everybody. I'm Lee Flynn. I'm an alcoholic. And I am from Florence, Alabama. My sobriety date is January 13th, 2005. First off, I'd like to say I've had a great weekend. Everybody has been so kind to me, and it's been a real comfortable, relaxing weekend. And I want to do it again. And I hope to be back with you guys and girls. I want to thank my friend Evan for bringing me up here, driving me, and sometimes it's kind of hard doing these trips, you know, going by yourself, and it's good to have a friend with you, especially one that's driving. And my friends Jewel, who spoke, and Ashley, they're members of my home group at one time, and kind of feels like they still are. They're just hadn't been seeing them lately. And so they're two of my favorite people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've really enjoyed getting to be with y'all for a couple days. So I want to thank Dirk for asking me to speak, and I know that everybody here, their thoughts are with him and prayers, and I know they are for me, that things will work out with that situation. All right, I'm going to do my best to follow directions and get down from here safely. So I'm going to try to tell you what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today, and how things have been in sobriety. I'm a missionary's kid. I come from a loving family, but my dad's a minister, and we traveled all over the place. My father's from South Africa, and my mom is from Muscle Shoals, Alabama. So I guess she won, because we're on this continent. And so from the time I was little, we were moving around, and we lived in the southern United States, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Texas, and in the Caribbean, and kind of back and forth. We lived in Antigua, the Virgin Islands, the Bahamas, the Cayman Islands, and I had an older sister, younger brother. I was loved. I mean, anytime my parents, if I wanted to spend time with them, they would. I mean, we did things together as a family. I do remember, even from the time I was little, feeling very scared a lot about everything. I don't know what that's about, but that, I mean, other than feeling scared, my childhood memories are pretty good. You know, they're pretty good. Sports was something that was always very important with me. And, you know, as that self-centered fear even developed more as I got older, sports took that thing away. Kind of what alcohol was going to do for me. And so I'd get on a basketball court, a soccer field, tennis court. I mean, it all went away. It was natural. My dad was a really good athlete. And I love sports. You know, that's what we did. About the time I was 15, I took my first drink. And so a little neighborhood in Florence, Alabama called Forest Hills, at a friend's house, and his parents were out of town. I'd been wondering about it. You know, I've been thinking about it a lot. And I took my first drink. A guy came up to me and said, "Would you like a screwdriver?" And I wasn't totally sure what he was talking about, but, you know, I wanted to fit in, and I felt real awkward all the time. And so I drank it. And I'm sure I had a couple more. And I got drunk for the first time. And I got lucky for the first time. And I knew I wanted to do those things as much as I could for the rest of my life. So I tried to do that. It was more successful at one than the other. But I'll tell you what, I don't know that my drinking looked that much different from other kids about my age in the schools in the city where I lived, because I had a very strict father, who loved me, but he was a very physically intimidating man. He's very big and strong. I didn't cross him. You know, I lied to him. I snuck around. I did all that. But, you know, I wasn't going to stand up to my dad and tell him what I was going to do. I mean, he would have flattened me, you know. So I had to sneak around. You know, can I spend the night at a friend's house? Can I do this and get away for the weekend? That's when I would drink. You know, I'd get drunk. I never drank for any other reason than to get, you know, for effect. I want to feel what that feels like. And so that's what I did all the way through high school. I kind of floundered around, you know. School, I was always in the middle, you know, just kind of dodge any attention either way. Definitely not one of the smartest kids in the class, but, you know, I probably squeaked out a little better than some, too. So sports kind of made it look like things were okay. But academically, you know, just enough to get by. It came time to graduate high school, and a lot of my friends had plans, you know, like colleges and what apprenticeships and things. And I mean, it had not crossed my mind. Like, you know, so, I mean, it's getting close to graduation, and I figure I need to do, what am I going to do? My parents said they were going to move to Texas. We live in Alabama. And, you know, you would think a guy like me is wanting to get away and do whatever he wanted to do would get away from his parents. I didn't. I followed them out to Texas. Didn't know anybody out there. I guess the security of it. Last second, I got a little scholarship at a small college to play tennis out there. I was an okay tennis player. So I went and tried out this tennis team, East Texas Baptist University in Marshall, Texas. And I got out there, and I was terrified. Because when I moved, I didn't drink. I didn't know anybody. And I was living in my parents' house, and I was commuting. It was about an hour and a half drive to school for my classes. And I was just eaten up with that fear, you know. What are you doing? You're not good enough to play on this team. You're going to, I mean, these classrooms would have like 150 people in them with the, you know, the stadium seating. And I'd walk in, I'd just be crippled by fear. Sometimes I would drive an hour and a half to class, and I'd sit in my truck and not go in because I was just eaten up with that fear. I don't know what that's about, but that's how I was. A few months went by, and I finally met up with some guys at a public basketball court. You know, sports is where I connected. And I just pulled up one day and started playing basketball. Some of those guys were doing some extracurricular activities after the playing the basketball, and I got in with them. And what it did was I started drinking all over again. And I really did never quit again. I mean, I quit a couple times for reasons you'll hear about, but I drank, and that's what was missing, you know. Alcohol worked for me. I mean, it worked. I didn't really have any bad consequences other than I didn't pay attention to anything else in my life. And so I drank, and what I did was I floundered. I just floundered. You know, when my parents or people that cared about me, the heat would get on me, I would give you enough little effort to make it look like I'm trying to regroup and trying to do better. I'd get a new job. Somebody from the church my dad was preaching at would give me a good opportunity. You know, I remember I got enrolled in college again in another college. I dropped out of the first one, and didn't know if I was going to be able to get a Pell Grant to go to college. And a nice older man from church, he paid my tuition to go to college. And then I got the Pell Grant, and I just got drunk on all that money, you know. That's what I do. I don't even tell, you know, I don't write thank you notes. I don't do none of that stuff. I just, great, you know. And so that's what I did. I would work fast food restaurants, wait tables, re-enroll in another college, start out maybe pretty stellar for a week, maybe make a good grade on the first test, and then not go back to class. I mean, I never really failed. I don't know that I've ever failed a class for a reason other than not going to class. I mean, it's like you could not make me attend class. I would not go. Because my head, you know, I've got this thinking problem. And I would do all right, and then that would buy me time. Well, I can skip a class. I just made an A on the test. Well, then I missed the first class, and I wonder if she gave some assignments on that first time. Well, I'll wait. And then I've made all these excuses, and now it's been too long. I can't go back because then I'm going to have to talk to her, and I don't want to have the conversation. All this crazy things happen in my head, and the thing that fixed that for me is drinking. You know, let's just not think about this right now and drink. So that's what I did, and I did a lot of other things outside of drinking that I think helped me get to where I got to quickly. And this was a time period where I did all that. You know, just anything and everything. Felt like I was trying new things every night. Having brushes with death all the time. Overdosing, wrecks. All the things that began to happen for me. And I started getting scared, you know. I'm a daily drinker. I'm not a binge drinker or a wait for the weekend. And, I mean, I drank daily. There was never any other way. And that was early for me. So there was a time where I could get through a day of work if I knew the drink was on the other side at the end of the day of work, or I had to get the money in order to drink. But, I mean, that's it. I drink every day. The whole purpose of the day is to get to that point. And that's what I did. And so I started getting scared because it had been quite some time since there had been a day without drinking. And so I had this thought pop into my head. I don't know if I can stop drinking, you know. I don't know if I, and I was really scared. If you're like me, I mean, telling the truth about that kind of stuff is like, that's not even a possibility, even if you're concerned. So I wasn't going to tell the truth, but I wanted to change. So I tried a couple things. There was a nice man at the church that my dad worked at, and he like worked with the young guys, and I liked him. We like connected on a sports level. And I guess he saw that I was a pretty troubled young man. And he asked me if I would go on a couple trips with him and the youth group, just be like a chaperone type of guy to like Colorado and do these things over the summer. And I took that as, here's an opportunity for you to stop drinking. You know, I'm going to stop. This is my shot. And I did. And I stopped for about 2 months. And around this time, I don't know, I was 21, 22. I was crazier than I'd ever been in my life. Crazy. I remember I would like look at a Bible, like I need help in here. And it was just words on a page. I mean, I was a big missing ingredient there, and that of course was telling the truth. I just want to be better. You know, let's just not think about all this stuff that's happening. Let me just be a better person now. And I found out here that that's not how it works. So about 2 months later, I took a drink, thank God, because I was a raving lunatic. And, you know, one more time. I only tried to stop one more time where I was successful. And I did a geographic from Texas back to Alabama, and it just lasted a couple weeks. And I was off to the races again. So really in about, I don't know, 11, 12 years of drinking, I stopped for about, I don't know, a few months in there. I loved it. I mean, alcohol does something for me that I'm sure a lot of you understand, but I mean, it's like if anything does that, it's the greatest thing in the world. I mean, it wasn't like alcohol was kind of fun. I mean, it is the magic elixir for life. And did that for a long time. Consequences, of course, started to happen. I started to do a lot of things I said I would never do. I started to kind of, you know, my morals and all, they just kept getting lower and lower. I guess the crowd, I don't know if the crowd, I am that crowd. So I found my crowd maybe over time. But started going to seedier places, doing seedier things, being okay with inappropriate behavior. You know, I remember I was one of those guys. I was raised, you treat ladies a certain way, you know, you don't do that, you know, you never put your hands on a woman type of thing. And, you know, I remember being at a guy's house and him kicking the lady right in front of me. And I came there to get something, and I didn't have it yet. So, you know, I just didn't say anything about it and kind of pretend like I didn't see that, you know. Those kind of things were happening on a regular basis for me. You know, just, I know that's not right. I know I feel bad, but I just can't, I don't, you know, I just got to drink. And so I was doing things like that. That was just my regular day. I started stealing a lot. You know, of course, I start with my family because usually they won't put you in jail or hurt you. So I start with them and then work out. So I started stealing a lot, and it was caught, you know, people were starting to ask questions and disappearing from the house for long periods of time. And There's only so many tires you can change for old ladies on the side of the road when they're, because I used to say that, you know, I was helping this lady change her tire. I had one last ditch effort at trying to straighten myself up, and this was about the time I was 25. I was going to get married. You know, you just need a good girl. And the people that told me that meant well. And maybe for certain people, a good woman would really put their life on the right track. There's no woman or thing out there that's going to fix alcoholism. Because I did marry a good woman. But that's not a defense against alcoholism. And so we were married for about a year and a half before I got into the program. Needless to say, that was an interesting first year and a half of marriage, because I was doing some weird, odd things. What happened was I just stole so much. I acted so crazy. I did such odd things. I was such an unstable person that my lies couldn't keep it going any longer. You know, I mean, I'm the actor, obviously, and I'm pretty good at it. I think I'm better than most. But it caught up with me. And so what happened was everybody knew at the same time, you know. So I couldn't work an angle anymore. You know, when the heat would get bad here, I can go work on my mom, or I can maybe the in-laws or the boss at work. Well, I mean, even the boss at work and the in-laws and the mother and my sister and, I mean, people from different states, they came in, you know. And, you know, in the weeks leading up, I remember one time having like a big crying spell in my front yard, laying there with my dad and my wife over me. The neighbor being outside, which is hilarious because when I got to one of my first meetings, he was there, the neighbor. He said, "I thought I might see you here one day." Had no idea, you know, I had no idea. But what happened was they confronted me. There was nowhere to go. If I wanted to continue drinking, I was going to be walking on the street without any money, any vehicle, any asset. I mean, there was nothing. There was no way to get another dollar unless I just walked down the road and tried to steal it. So, getting help sounded a little better, you know. And the truth is pretty much the last couple years, I mean, suicidal thoughts and that sort of thing was pretty routine for me, you know. I mean, it wasn't like I was living it up. I hated myself. It says in the big book, we were in a position where life was becoming impossible. That is the best description I can give to the last couple years of my drinking. It's just impossible to get up and have to do it again. Like, how am I going to do it again today? And just not know how, and then just somehow pull it together. Maybe, you know, I remember going to get a half case of beer to figure out I'm going to quit drinking, you know, because I can't even think if I'm not drinking. And then once I drink, oh, it's not that bad. You know, it's good. So I got confronted, put in a psych ward in Tennessee, Madison, Tennessee. Lost my mind, you know, really. And I don't say that to be cute, because I was really in that place where I did not know if I could come back. You know, I was regularly having go to these places in my mind where I don't know if I'm ever going to be a normal person again. You know, I don't know if I can think. It's not working up here, you know. It's just very scary. And the thought of not drinking or continuing, as Jewel discussed and is discussed in our book, I mean, that's terrifying, you know. Both of those options terrify me, continuing or not. How do you not do it, you know? I've got a lot of good people in my life. I had good people in my life then as a result of my family and the community I lived in that were just nice to me in spite of, you know. So I had good examples. And I had men that went to work, played with their kids, I'm like, how do you do that? You know, how do you do that? How do you go to work and come home? And I'd love to do it, but it just seems impossible. So when I ended up in that psych ward, my life was over. There was one little piece that kind of The only peace that even was something near feeling, having a good thought was, maybe they won't let me die here, you know, because I've been on so much other things. I don't know what's about to happen to my body, you know. I'm putting a lot of things in my body, and I have been for a long time, and at least I'm in a medical facility. Maybe they'll give me some drugs, you know, like, because I was terrified of the sickness, you know, what's going to happen. First few days, I wouldn't participate in anything and my father, my sister, and my wife, they drove me up there, 2.5-hour drive with me, who was crazy, in the back seat of a car. And, you know, it's not easy for them to have to see that. And when I got into the emergency room, I did some crazy things, and didn't have control of myself. And I guess to have to picture what they were going through at the time, you know, is they don't know how, if you're going to be okay. But anyway, first few days I would not participate in anything, and finally this mean old nurse, she said, "Your wife's been calling for 3 days. Are you not going to get up and talk to your wife?" Like, they had a phone in the hallway that family could call. I was like, fine. So I went and talked to her, and I guess that kind of got me up, because all I would do was I would freeze in the bed, and then every now and again I would go sit in the floor in the shower in the hot water and just sit there, and I would do that. That's all I would do. And so I went to what they call group. Some of you may have been there before. I'd never experienced anything like it. Now, my uncle had been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know this. I just knew my uncle was in AA. No, I knew he was an alcoholic. And when I was about 12, he committed suicide. Now, I didn't know that he had gone to AA. I found that out later. So I didn't really know. I mean, we didn't talk about that much. I mean, why would you? It's pretty sad, you know? And a man came in from the outside, and it was a black man. We didn't really look anything alike. As he described where he came from, not really much alike. I weighed about 150 pounds, which is about 55 pounds less than I do right now. He looked like he was about 200 and healthy. He had a belt and shoelaces. I didn't. He told his story, and I was just fascinated. I mean, I could not even have a solid thought. Just a lunatic. I feel bad. Oh, my God. And then I'm just listening to this man. And he was telling his story. I didn't know what he was doing. It was just like, he's talking. You know, this guy's talking. And he started telling his story, and I am just locked in on this guy. He talked about how he stole from his family. I was like, hey, you know, like, I got you there. And he said that his mother and them, when they would see him coming, they would start hiding their purses, putting things away. My parents had never really locked their house, and I started showing up at their house sometimes, and the doors would be locked. And it's because I go in there and steal all their change or anything I could get. You know, I need some money. He said that he had gotten into this program and taken some steps or something. And he said that he had been sober for 5 years. And I just, like, what in the world is that? You know, like, but he had told so much that, I mean, this guy wasn't blowing smoke. I mean, because he was saying stuff that I don't know why you would say that to other people, you know, like, but he told me, he said this story in there. He said he'd been doing this program, he had been sober for some time, and he went to get groceries for his mother at the store, and when he came back and gave her the groceries and handed her the receipt and the change, she didn't count it. And right when he said that, something inside me changed. I didn't know that's what happened. But I realized that that's what I wanted. Because what he had just told me was because of this program, his family trusted him again. And my family did not trust me. As a matter of fact, those couple days leading up in the next couple months, they were pretty much finding out on a daily basis large portions about their son, brother, husband that they had never known. So something inside me changed and I wanted that. And I didn't know anything. I just knew that guy said that, something happened. I would love to have that. I know my history. It doesn't matter what I want. I always drink again and burn my life to the ground. So it just because this is a nice feeling, I didn't know, you know. So I was in there for a few more days, and they had set it up where I was going to a men's treatment center in Burns, Tennessee. And so this guy come, and he picked me up from the treatment center and took me there. And they're like, "We just do Alcoholics Anonymous here." I was like, "Whatever, you know. What does that mean? You know, like, do yoga and I'm down. Like, whatever." But that's really, and looking back, that really is all they did. You know, they gave you a big book, a 12 and 12, a daily reflections. You did 86, 87, 88 in the morning and at night, and you got with a guide and you started taking the steps. That's all you did. If you want to do something else, then it wasn't there. You know, I mean, you could, whatever. So I fell in with members of Alcoholics Anonymous right off the gate. Everyone that worked there is a member of AA. And what had happened to me as a result of one alcoholic talking to another, I identified, and I had surrendered, and I didn't know it. I like what was said last night about the steps kind of happening to you before you start taking them, because that's what happened to me. It's almost like 1, 2, and 3 had just happened. You know, and there was a willingness in me that had never been there before. I did not care what I had to do. I would do it. All I wanted to do was, like, do the book stuff. Like, read the book, do the prayer. Like, all I wanted to do whatever I thought was the program. Come to find out there's a lot more than that. But when all the other guys, or a lot of the guys, you know, they want free time. Or let's go fishing on free time. Or I don't want to do any of that. You know, I mean, I just want to, can we talk about this some more? And what it was something that happened to me. It was beyond my control. And thank God that it happened to me, because I wanted to be sober more than anything in the world. And at that point, I mean, I didn't know, does this mean I'm going to live in Nashville now? Do I have a wife anymore? All that was kind of hanging in the balance, you know. And am I going to have to live in a halfway house for a long time? Or I don't care. You know, I mean, I think I have some preferences, but I'm not even going to say them, you know. But that's not how it worked out. My wife came to some of the family things after a couple weeks. I was so uncomfortable around her as a sober person early on that the first time she came, I asked her to leave. And it wasn't a mean thing. I just couldn't do it. Like, I don't even know how to talk to you. Like, I'm scared. And she had a rough... You know, it was. She had it pretty rough for a while, because there's a lot of stuff. You know, there's a lot of stuff. And I came home and I got into AA. There had been one guy from my area in Alabama that had been to that treatment center about 9 months before. And it's the only guy the treatment center knew that was anywhere near me that was sober. And so they called him. And I asked him, would he be my sponsor before I got out? And he said, yeah. Well, come to find out, he had never sponsored anyone before, and but he had carried one person to treatment, who was his nephew. That would have been about 4 months earlier. When he was 5 months sober, my soon-to-be sponsor had been going to the treatment center every Friday night, driving 2 hours, and that was what his recovery was. He would just drive back to the treatment center and go to the alumni meeting. He didn't go to meetings or have a sponsor or anything because he was scared or something. Anyway, so he gets a call from his brother that his nephew is living in a car and has just burned his life to the ground and needs some help. Well, he didn't go to AA, my sponsor, so he didn't know what to do. But he remembered in the big book there was a chapter called Working with Others. So he read it, And then he went and 12-stepped him and took him to treatment. And that guy's still sober. He just celebrated 10 years. So what Chris did for me was, he had never sponsored anybody, but he was willing. So what he did is, he went to a local AA group and he picked up like every pamphlet off the wall and he brought them to me that night. He's like, I think you need to read these. So he lived about 30 minutes away, and what he did for me, which I hope everybody gets to have people like this do this for them, was he picked me up and he would take me to meetings close to my house because he wanted me to get comfortable with going to meetings. And he didn't know anybody at these meetings. And he was scared himself, but he was getting out of himself to help me. What I ended up doing was just going to where he had begun going to meetings, and it was about 30 minutes away, but at least I knew him, you know, and just get close to this guy. So we started taking the steps, you know. I knew that that was the answer from the people I fell in with the treatment center. I'm like, when can we take the steps? I want to take the steps. I want to do it. Well, we did it, and we just would do whatever the book said. Like, I mean, it was kind of like the blind leading the blind, but he could see a little bit better than me. But we had the thing, you know, we had the thing. And we had that surrender, which is pretty much the key ingredient to sobriety, in my opinion. I had been surrendered. And that was the missing piece, you know, because as a surrendered person, my opinion doesn't matter. I know that this brain up here is what's been killing me. I know that I need to do some things that I don't want to do, and I'm willing to do them. All that came as a result of surrender that I had never had before. And so what was left was a person that was pliable, you know. My life began to get better. I got sober. I got another sponsor about nine months, and he's still my sponsor today. And we went through the steps again. And he's a big action guy. That's all he talks about. It's action. He's like, your action speaks so loud I can't hear a word you're saying. You don't even really care about what I talk about, really. We do these actions out of the book, you know. See if you have a problem after you've taken some action. You know, let's see how you feel after you've done this, this, and this. And what he did was, he made me believe in this program. You know, I remember somebody was talking about their wife, and I couldn't talk to my wife. I'm telling you, man. I mean, it was just, she was supportive. She wanted me to do well. I'm sure she had a lot of resentment and stuff she was probably dealing with. In fact, she married a person she wasn't sure she really married. But I couldn't talk to her, you know, and I was telling my sponsor about it. I was like, I just want to be at AA meetings, and I'm just really uncomfortable in the living room, you know. And he told me to wash the dishes. And take the trash out and not tell her that I did it. That's hard. I did it. And within a day or two, I found myself in comfortable conversation with my wife. You know, and what that helped me to begin to see was, taking these actions do change the way I think. You know, thinking about how I don't feel good or my problems usually makes them worse for me. But if I will get out of myself and take some action, sometimes I come out the other side and my mind is better. If not, I still did something productive for someone, right? So I started learning things like that, you know. I remember one time I called him, and this is probably the last time I complained to him. And I complained about something, you know. And he told me to get off my rear end and cut my dang grass. And I was like, you know, kind of got off the phone in a nice way and hung up the phone. I was like, he is a stupid, you know, like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I ain't cutting the grass, you know. About an hour later, I cut the grass. I don't even know what it was, you know. Now I know, you know, sometimes I still don't want, I know it's probably going to work and I still don't want to do it, but I get miserable enough, I'll do it. But he taught me a lot. He taught me that the answer is in this big book. You know, the answer is there. You need to find a power, God, that can give you what you need. Lack of power is your dilemma. I'm not the power, you know. This book will lead you to the power, you know, and you're going to have seasons in your life when you just can't be supported with a room full like this all the time. And you need to have a relationship with God, you know. I'm so glad he did that. Another thing that the guys that helped me, I'm so glad that they did this for me, was early on they said, you need to hurry up and get through the steps so you can help another man. And what they were saying, because I felt like I'm this new little sick guy that needs to be taken care of for a while, you know, or I'm like trouble, you know, I'm like a pain for these guys to have to help. And they're like, quit with that stuff. You need to get better and help this new guy walking through the door. And that's how it worked for me, you know. I sponsored people early, you know, early. I had a sponsor to go to, you know. It's not like I had to have all the answers, and they're really there anyway. But I was really guided by people that were in this book and have a relationship with God and love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's what I fell into. And I'm so grateful for that. People have just been kind to me all the way through in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I've done some stupid stuff. I've been really crazy. And just especially the men of Alcoholics Anonymous have taken care of me, you know. I love Al-Anon women, too. You know, one of my favorite people is my wife's sponsor. And she's just one of those ladies, you just know it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. So I love Al-Anon. At about 2 years sober, my wife had kind of come to a bottom of her own, and she decided, I mean, she had played, you know, gone to open meetings and gone to a few Al-Anon meetings, but she had a bottom experience. Her story's way better than mine, by the way. and she, I mean, crisis. Crippled, in the bed, can't do anything. Called this lady in Nashville named Sissy, and that started her life, you know. Same thing, you know. I mean, they do things a little different than we do, but she took the steps and changed, you know. And so I love Al-Anon, and I'll always be grateful to Al-Anon. What happened for us was that prepared us to live. And we had children. I have a son that is 5, or he'll be 5 in January. I have a daughter that's 8 months. I got to go back to school. You know, I dropped out of 5 colleges, had a GPA that was... it took me, I think, 4 semesters of making A's and B's to get off of academic probation. So it just would not come up, you know, for a long time. But what I learned because of a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous is that you do well in school by attending school. Who knew? So I started attending school. And when I would have a problem or I was having a difficulty, I would, from direction from my sponsor, would speak to my teacher and tell them my difficulty or ask them, what can I do different? Common sense, maybe, to normal people. Not me, you know, because if I'm doing bad, I'm probably just not good enough. I need to go die. You know, that I kind of get there quick. But what he taught me was, I guess what he was really teaching me is how to be a responsible, disciplined adult, which I still need help with today. I started to work. I started delivering newspapers. I owed the newspaper almost $1,000 when I quit working there. So I don't think it worked out really well, but I was going to work. I had all those machines with the quarters, and they would get, all my money would get stolen, and I would use the quarters to buy cigarettes and stuff like that all the time. So anyway, I didn't miss work, though, and I would have to be there at midnight or 3 in the morning. And for somebody that didn't really go to work much anyway, that's something, okay? And I ended up meeting this lady there, and we would talk to each other while we were waiting on our papers, and she was a case manager in the area. Well, I decided to go back to school and become a social worker, and she put in a good word for me to get hired working in the group home there, working with adults having intellectual disability. And so I started doing that while I was going to school, and now I'm still there, and I've been there about 8 years now. I don't work places for 8 years. I don't work places for 8 months. And I've progressed in that agency. You know, I've got to move up and, you know, help provide. That's my career path, you know. I work with adults that have intellectual disability. And my wife works with adults that have mental illness. And we go to AA and Al-Anon. And so if we see somebody walking down the road, we usually know who they are, you know. Kind of covers it, you know. I'll tell you this. There's been so many good things said this weekend, and some of the best things said were said out of this room. What I found here is a power that works. It's perfect. You know, I used to be the kind of guy that would say things like, man, if this ever happened to me, I would, whatever, some crazy thing. You know, I would kill him, or I would, whatever. What I found is I have a power here that is sufficient for anything that I've come across, okay? And I face things as a sober man today, because that's really the only choice. And what I've found is some of the most, what you think would be devastating things, have been things that have reinforced the power. This past year, we had my daughter, and she was, at about 8 weeks, she started having seizures all the time. And we didn't know what was wrong with her. And we were going hospital to hospital, Huntsville, Birmingham Children's Hospital, and it was a couple months where we could not get the seizures under control. She's just having them all the time. They were trying on medicine, and all these things were happening. And, I mean, as you can imagine, we're just distraught, you know. Because Birmingham Children's and some of these places, I mean, those are top-notch facilities, you know, and they're doing everything, and it's awful. And it's like when they give her seizure medicine, it gets worse. Anyway, after about, it was the end of July, 1st of July, they diagnosed her. They found out what was wrong with her. And what it ended up being is this really rare condition that she's going to have for the rest of her life. And there's only about, I don't know, they say around 500 in the world that have it. But there is a treatment for it. She's going to have some deficits probably, and we're working on those. But they found out what she needed, which is a special diet. And the day after she started that special diet, she hasn't had a seizure since then. That would have been one of those things that I would have said, I just couldn't keep on if that happened to a child of mine, you know? And it's just not true. First of all, you don't know what you'll do. Second of all, if it was me dealing with it, that might be some of the choices. But I have a relationship with God. God's got all the power. So what has happened is we're handling it. We're happy. She's happy. I'm not gone through some deep, dark depression where I can't be consoled or anything. It's not credit to me. It's credit to the guy that I was introduced to in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? God has done everything for me that I ever wanted. And the only time that I have difficulty is usually when I'm getting away from that power, or you people. Because lots of times, you people in this room, I mean, y'all are like the skin, you know. God can sometimes feel far away from me, you know. I always wanted to see God, you know, like, what does he look like? Where does he live? All these kind of things. And I remember an AA lady telling me, you know, God's like the wind, you know. You don't see the wind, but when it blows through the leaves, you see the results of the wind. And I'm like, so that's what y'all are. It's been amazing for me to be around some people like you guys, especially some of you guys have been around a long time, because I want to be around a long time, you know, because I need to be here. as you heard, I mean, I probably don't have a chance without this place here, you know, and my family really wants me to be here, you know. My family has a respect for AA, and I think before I came here and this happened to me, I don't know if their opinion would have been that, but, you know, results speak for themselves. And when you have a son or daughter who's hopeless and all of a sudden they're not, you know, you probably quit caring about little things like that. Thank y'all for letting me share. Appreciate it.